Hi, everybody, and welcome to another special episode of the Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Subi Sadeh. On this episode, I was joined by my dear friend, David Simmons, who discusses his background, and he delves into the difference between isolators and RABs, two types of equipment used in clean rooms critical for sterile processing. David also starts to touch on the standards and parameters set by EU and ISO and suggests various resources, including EU Annex 1 and ISO 14644. For learning more about sterile processing and clean room requirements, I hope you enjoy this episode with David.
Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sadeh. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery, so this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate Podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen, and together we can simplify by combinating.
Prior to the consulting world, I worked for an aseptic fill finish facility. It was a startup in Wisconsin where I wore a number of different hats and also dabbled with some enterprise quality management system configuration. So my background is pretty general as far as quality, manufacturing, even a little bit of product development, tech transfer. Right now I'm supporting some clinical scale up project management type work and mostly focusing on project management within life sciences.
You started out in food, didn't you? Or you worked in
engineer by trade. So the short story is after graduating, I still wanted to go to medical school, but was figuring out what I really wanted to do and, had to find a job. So I started working in corporate quality assurance for a private label food company, which is where I had my first exposure to FDA and risk assessments and just quality in general. And then I moved to Southern Wisconsin to be with my now wife and worked in a biofuel facility. So that's where I got most of my engineering background, running down P&IDs. Learning about basic controls within that biofuel facility. And then that's when I started working for the aseptic fill finish facility.
Yeah, so you're one of my compasses as far as things that I don't know in manufacturing. What I wanted to delve into is maybe walk me through your first exposure to clean rooms.
Yeah, well, I can go ahead and do that. I think just a quick comment to that, Subi, is especially looking at life sciences as a whole, everything that is regulated within life sciences, whether it's medical device, cosmetics, pharmaceutical or whatnot, it's all about finding the right references, finding the right guidelines, documents to go off of. And then once you do that, it's a lot of the same processes, right? So as far as references that I'll be referring to for clean rooms, and specifically from a sterile product side, Annex 1 was recently released in the EU. So that'll be one of the biggest guiding documents that I'm referring to here, and probably reading verbatim on some of the language, because I think they do a pretty good job of giving you a general idea of what we're trying to achieve here. And then there's also the ISO standards. So ISO 14644 is the main one within clean room classification.
In terms of adoption, because Annex 1 is EU focused, have you seen companies just blanket apply it to everything global? Because it, in some instances, I can't think of any, and I'm not an expert, but I can't think of any instances where Annex 1 is less controlled than what most companies are doing. So are people kind of upgrading and over complying for non-EU?
I know I've seen both ways, right? I've seen companies just maintain where they're at, and Annex 1 does a good job of allowing that and basically saying, we'll grandfather you in to a certain extent. But I know that the FDA, with a couple of the conferences and stuff that I've attended, when they've spoken to the topic of Annex 1, is really buying Annex 1 and adapting it within their own guidance and their own inspection standards and checklists that they're looking at.
Okay, cool. So there might be some harmonization coming through. So your first exposure to clean rooms?
My first exposure to clean rooms would have been that aseptic fill finish facility that I worked with. So within that facility, it was previously designed to handle Botox. A lot of people don't know Botox is one of the most potent products. So there was more than just a sterility concern for producing the products, but it was also designed for containment, which is a whole nother topic beyond clean rooms, right? Especially when you start talking about pressure cascades and balancing of rooms and environments, if you're using isolators or RABs. So that facility.
What's the containment versus sterility? Is that like what's coming to my mind is silicone migration? Is that kind of a similar thing conceptually?
I think the best way to explain it is with the pressure cascade, right? So if you're focused on sterility and you're looking at the references, whether it be Annex 1 or ISO standards, when you're looking at sterility, your grade A zone, which is going to be your critical zone where most of your high risk operations, your aseptic connections, those types of things are taking place, is going to be at a positive pressure to your grade B area or your surrounding area. And the reason is you want any of that particulate or risk particulate to stay in that grade B zone or go to the grade B area. Now, the difference is if you have a very potent cytotoxic type material or product that could be a risk to your operators or to the facilities or environment, now you start talking about wanting your isolator, your grade A zone, to be a negative pressure to your grade B area, right? And that's where you start hearing the term containment. And again, what that'll do is that'll keep the cytotoxic, the dangerous material inside the isolator and keep it away from your operators.
Can you, and maybe a little bit more detail on the pressure differentials and what it means in maybe a little bit more layman's terms? Are you saying, broadly speaking, with grade A, grade B, you want to make sure that everything that you're actively almost pushing out or making sure that grade B doesn't get into grade A, whereas when you have a potent cytotoxic drug that has maybe more sort of OSHA-y concerns for the operator, you are concerned about things coming in from grade B, but at the same time, you want everything to stay wherever that, basically, you have a product that's being manufactured in a grade A environment that also happens to be cytotoxic. So is it more neutral then, or the differential is in a way that keeps it in? And so you have to figure out some other way to deal with particles.
Yeah. So it really would never be neutral as far as a pressure differential. A lot of facilities, especially newer facilities, when they have that cytotoxic capability or hormone or solvent capability, and let's just focus on cytotoxic for the site for the point of this conversation, they have it segregated or separated from the rest of their manufacturing facility. And the reason is for that same reason of if they can keep the clean room kind of separate, they could control the class, or the airflow and the pressure cascades so that it's more segregated from the facility itself. But the grade A, grade B would never match the same pressures, right? Now, that's where I'm saying if it's cytotoxic, it's more likely that the grade A zone is going to be negative to the grade B. So that if you're looking, and that's where there's smoke studies, right, and stuff that look at it from a particulate standpoint and airflow standpoint to make sure you're not introducing contamination or cross-contamination or any other type of contamination to your product. But at the same time, from an environmental standpoint, you're not pushing that dangerous material out into the room where operators might be.
Hmm.
Now, if you take it the other way and you look at a non-cyto product and just looking at regular sterile processing, the grade A zone is going to be positive to the grade B area so that that air is leaving the A zone and going into the B area.
And so just to use the smoke study as a guiding light, if it is cytotoxic or has some considerations, you would see the smoke either, you'd see the smoke be maintained in the grade A or contained within grade A, versus if it's just a run-of-the-mill garden variety of, you know, sterile injectable, you would see the smoke going from grade A to grade B.
Right. Except for with most of the isolator technology that is out there now, and that is one of the big pushes for Annex 1, is moving more and more towards isolators versus RABs or open RABs, is isolator technology today is very good at containment itself, creating a grade A zone in itself, circulating air within itself, having its own air handlers. So there really isn't, if you were in a cytotoxic environment where you had a grade A zone within an isolator and a grade B surrounding area, and you started to see smoke go into the isolator, there's bigger concerns than just the containment issue, right? You would be checking, why is your isolator leaking? Why are you getting air into your isolator? You shouldn't be getting air into your isolator from the grade B zone in any, for any reason. And that would be more of a sign of a seal is broken or something needs to be fixed. If you have gloves, which I know right now they're pushing more and more away from gloves also.
Why?
Gloves introduce operators, and operators are always a risk. Gloves also can leak, right? So if you remove gloves, you're removing the risk of potential contamination or leak.
And then one thing that you said that I'm reading into a little bit is that the, just from a following the standards point of view, if you are operating in that model where it's for the cytotoxic or unique drug or whatever, are you technically not following the standard and you'd have to do a risk assessment or something to a little bit more elaborately document what you're doing?
I would say risk assessment should be done regardless of what product you're making or environment you're working. I think one of the big pushes that Annex 1 has, and the EU probably pushes more than the US, is contamination control strategies, which is a method of going through risk assessment and documenting your contamination control. But I would say regardless of product or environment, risk assessment should be done.
Can you walk me through the RABS isolator difference and which one is more controlled?
Yeah, the isolator would definitely be more controlled and is considered probably the more innovative technology. It's what the industry seems to be moving more and more towards. Again, one of the biggest things with RABS is there's still the risk of operator intervention, which a lot of companies from a business standpoint, have historically preferred the RABs for that reason, right? If you have a jam or equipment malfunction where an operator potentially could fix it, historically, it's been accepted or allowed for an operator to aseptically intervene, and that all had to be validated, qualified, and looked at through risk assessment, and then product could be accepted or would have to be rejected based on that. But with more and more isolator, more and more robotic type technology, it's pulling that operator away from being able to intervene, or at least now having to use robotics to intervene, where there's much, much lower risk of contamination from the operator themselves.
And the robotics is the isolator?
No, the robotics would not necessarily be the isolator itself. The robotics would be contained within the isolator that would help facilitate either your aseptic processing, or if you were to try and have robotics for aseptic interventions, it would be more on the equipment side, not so much the isolator or the environment side.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is the difference between the isolator and a RABS is that the isolator has built-in non-human, non-operator controls. They may be, you know, there is no opening of the seal in an isolator to do
within a manufacturing campaign. Correct. Right. Some isolators you can still open outside of your GMP campaign. Right. So if you, did need to fix a piece of equipment or something like that, you would be able to open the isolator after or before a batch. But then isolators also allow you to do decontamination, vaporized hydrogen peroxide type cycles contained within the isolator. Versus if you move more towards that RABS, it can be done. It's a lot more tricky. There's a lot more modifications that need to be done to be able to do it. But those usually have like door handles where you can open it up. And an operator could open it up right in the middle of a GMP run, theoretically, versus the isolator is more locked down and sealed, where you wouldn't be able to do that.
Could you maybe walk through the kind of differences in the equipment? Like, what does an isolator look like versus a RABS? And can you just tell by looking at it?
Yes. Generally, you can tell by looking at it. An isolator is all-encompassing, where it's going to be sealed, right? Where you're going to have your glass or whatever that you can look through, followed by like the frame, but it also usually has the HEPA units built right into it, the filter units on top, lights, everything is built within that frame. So it's kind of all-encompassing, as well as any kind of air returns are all part of that isolator system to control that environment. It includes any kind of temperature monitoring, relative humidity, whatever the case is. It's really all encompassing versus a RABS. And there's two main different types of RABS. There's just RABS, and then there's open RABS. And open RABS is where it's open to the grade B area, it's open to its environment. So air can and typically passes in through the top of the open RABS and leaves through the bottom of the open RABS into the environment, versus more of a closed RABS wouldn't have those openings, but it's not to the level of an isolator where it's fully sealed. So an isolator in Annex 1 is a decontaminated unit with an internal work zone meeting grade A conditions that provides uncompromised continuous isolation of its interior from the external environment. And then they actually have it split up into two types of isolators, a closed isolator system and an open isolator system. So a closed system. It says excludes external contamination of the isolator's interior by accomplishing material transfer via aseptic connection to auxiliary equipment rather than use of openings to the surrounding environment. A closed system remains sealed throughout operation versus an open isolator system designed to allow for continuous or semi-continuous ingress and or egress of materials during operations through one or more openings. So it really comes down to closed versus open is the openings for material transfer. And then
RABS?
Yep. RABS has a lot more to it from an Annex 1 standpoint. So it's a system that provides an enclosed but not sealed environment meeting defined clean room conditions and using a rigid wall enclosure and air overspill to separate its interior from the surrounding environment. The inner surfaces of the RABS are disinfected and decontaminated with sporicidal agent. Operators use gloves, half suits, rapid transfer systems, other integrated transfer ports to perform manipulations or convey materials. And then they actually have it broken up into four types. I said two, where they use active RABS, passive RABS, closed RABS, and open RABS. So I mentioned open closed. I didn't mention active passive.
Good. And what does active passive mean?
Active would be where integral HEPA filtered air supply versus passive is where air is supplied by the ceiling mounted HEPA filters.
What does that mean?
So we're talking a grade A zone within the RABS, it would be in a grade B surrounding room or grade A surrounding room, most likely grade B. And to maintain the grade B room environment or grade A, probably you'd have grade A airflow at least above it. And to maintain that, the actual room would have HEPA filters on the ceiling. And so passive RABS would be just accepting or taking the air from the room, from the filters of the room ceiling, versus an active RABS would have its own HEPA filtered air supply.
The isolators, does it matter what environment it's in if it's so enclosed?
Well, that's actually one of the big debates, right? Is like if it is sealed and you have this grade A zone within it, can it sit within a grade B or can it sit within a grade C or even a grade D? And so the most accepted kind of understanding right now is grade C is accepted.
Oh, really? And so why is it that a grade C is acceptable?
So according to Annex 1, they have a section covering background environments for both RABS and isolator systems. So for RABS used for aseptic processing, the background environment should meet at least grade B. The background environment for open isolators should meet grade C or D based on a risk assessment. Airflow studies should be performed to demonstrate the absence of air ingress during interventions such as door openings. And then they also go to say the background environment of a closed isolator should correspond to a minimum of grade D. The disinfection decontamination program should be included as a key consideration when performing the risk assessment for the contamination control strategy of an isolator. Where additional process risks are identified, a higher grade of a background should be considered, higher being grade C or grade B. The decision as to the supporting background environment should be documented in your contamination control strategy.
How do you recommend people learn this? Obviously, tours and stuff are helpful, though those aren't always easy access, particularly for folks who live in big cities. But
yeah, I would say there's a couple different ways. I was fortunate enough to be tossed into the environment, which forces you to learn about it. I think first trying to understand what the documents, references, guidelines are that are out there and available about it. So you can just kind of start learning the language. Annex 1 is a great place to start. It does a great job of not just summarizing kind of some of the clean room requirements, but sterile processing in general. Then there's also the ISO standard out there, 14644. There's a number of different webinars and also a number of different organizations that have conferences or classroom type trainings for this material. I'm more than willing to throw some recommendations out there if people want to reach out, but don't necessarily need to or want to promote those types of things through this. And then also just talking to people with the experience. So I feel free to reach out at any time.
Very good. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So I'm in the process of building a website, so that's not available right now, but I am on LinkedIn, which I know you can provide the information for that. So feel free to reach out to me there. Otherwise, my email address is david@lifescienceprofessionals.com, or through Subi and I are very close, good friends. So he can also make the connection.
Very good. Thanks for coming on, David.
Yeah, thanks, Subi.